One Mic, One Voice would like to extend love to the family of Jalen Ware, entrepreneur here in OKC, gunned down in a senseless robbery. My brother lost his best friend. Jalen's mother lost her son. Jalen's children lost their father. And the world lost an opportunity to see how great Jalen would really become, but still affected by his impact. You matter, little brother. The Grand Line Central Movement lives on.
Show that is created to give space where your voice, ideas, and informed opinions can be heard, appreciated, and debated. So just sit back, relax. Here we go. Welcome to the One Mic, One Voice show, Building the Collective Conscience, a show that is created to give space where your voice, ideas, and informed opinions can be heard, appreciated, and debated. I am your co-host, Michael Eric Owens, along with my co-host,
DT.
Yes, sir. We are here for our second show. We are extremely excited. We hope you had an opportunity to listen to the first one. And that was just, you know, that was just cracking the dome, if I could say that. Just briefly cracking the dome. And so now we're going to look inside today. And how you doing, DT?
Man, I'm doing good. I'm feeling good. It's a beautiful day outside, although there are lots of unpretty things going on in our world today.
Well, you know, man, I just recently got back in, did a little traveling, man. Was down in Alabama, Atlanta. History, right? I mean, you know, you see all the struggles that, not just our ancestors, man, but many people have come through to get to this point in America where we are striving to be one people. We're not there. Mm-hmm. You know, we're not there. We are still trying to get to the point where we can look at one another. And I want to go back to something you said the last show, and then we're gonna go into some things here. But you said that in the 21st century, we're still letting skin color dictate, you know, who is better, right, who is superior, who is inferior. I mean, that is just so true. And ever since you said that, that has just stayed in my conscience. And I've even shared it with some people.
Because it's absurd, isn't it?
It's extremely absurd. Extremely absurd. And what's even more along those lines is this immigration debate. I mean, how long will we continue to talk about people being in this country, don't belong in this country? They're, you know, murderers and thieves. And don't get me wrong. Crime comes in any shape, form, fashion, color, height, body size. Doesn't matter. Okay. But how long are we going to continue to have this debate about who is an American? Because guess what, folks? Except for black people now, all are immigrants.
Right.
Okay. They came willingly.
Right.
Okay. Black folks were forced to come here. Okay? We are Americans. What do you think the challenges are to understanding the immigration debate?
My idea of what the challenges are when it comes to immigration debate is that the powers that be get really particular about who's here to be accepted and who belongs, only when it comes to money. Mm. And so, yeah, they say, you know, they're taking the jobs away. There are lots of people who here or who are committing heinous crimes and whatnot. But in reality, when they talk about closing the borders and all of this nonsense, the borders don't close when capital is involved. The borders don't close when trade is involved of goods and products. The borders don't close when America is benefiting from these countries who are supposed immigrants, illegal or legal. So there's really a bigger picture here when we're talking about immigration reform, because only when it's beneficiary for the American is when it becomes a problem. Mm-hmm. But they'll pay under the table. They'll make certain sacrifices to make sure that people are able to live here illegally as long as it benefits them.
And I mean, let's just be realistic here. We took land that didn't belong to us. The United States took land that belonged to Mexican people, Indian people. Some of that land that California, Texas, Arizona, some of that land was in the families of what we would quote unquote quote say the other. So how can I come back to my land, which belonged to my family, which was part of my country, and you say to me, I don't belong here? Just because you come in and you take my car from me doesn't mean it's not my car. It's still my car. Well, you took it. You know, you got the keys. You driving around in it, right? But it's still my car. You know what I mean? And I still want it back. Okay, I still like I have a right to it. And I think a lot of this way we look at it, in a sense, as if we have this purity, you know, this pure form of looking at borders and what it means to be an American and what it means to look at other people in other countries, or quote unquote supposedly in other countries. You know what? It's deeper than that. It's more complex than that. And at the end of the day, it's about people. It's not about boundaries. It's not about nationality. It's not about race. It's about people. And when you're splitting up families, when the child is legal and the parents are illegal, and you're going to send the parents away and you're breaking up the family, who does that benefit? If we're trying to build up America, if we're trying to make America, you know, a place of diversity and inclusion and all of that, how is it? Because they're doing the work. Let's be honest. Yes,
exactly. Exactly.
Let's be, you know, they're doing the work. They are. There's multiple benefits that they bring to this country. And to sit up and say that the debate is black and white and, you know, you need to leave because you're not American, man, that's just great foolishness.
Man, I seen a real powerful video online. There was a Hispanic guy out in the hot sun working really hard. And somebody, I guess, had asked him about Donald Trump's perception of, you know, the Mexican people. And this guy just went off about, you know, how dedicated they were to their work and how hard they have to work to be able to provide for their families and things like this, and how that stuff right there can go swept under the rug and not be acknowledged when these people are actually here helping build. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Back in the day, they say that it was a luxury to be a person of leisure, which means that the rich folks didn't want to work. They hired and outsourced all the jobs to people who were poor, which created a comfort for them, of course. But obviously the country was built on the backs of those people that they consider now immigrants. Brought us over here as immigrants. We came over here by force. Not given the best circumstances. It's really sad to see a country support these other things they support and not support the real work that's being done by these people who are putting their lives on the line every day.
And what's on top of that is this idea of I have to be in the shadows. I have to live my life in the shadows because if I'm caught, I'm going to be sent away, and I'm trying to provide for my family. Now, I know there's an argument about, knowing who's in the country. I understand that. But I think the idea of you know, giving them a pathway to citizenship.
Mm-hmm. A legit path to citizenship.
Oh, legit path. And also getting them documented as well, taking them out of the shadows. You know, I can only think of, you know, Ralph Ellison when he talks about being invisible. You know, take them out, make them visible in society because they are contributing to society. And this argument that, you know, they're, you know, we got enough Americans, you know, domestic terrorism that's done by the sons of America, that to make an argument for that, that you can't say that these immigrants are the reason for our criminal charges, man. And it's just, to me,
America have to look at her history. To
be able to point that
finger like that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And there is a sense of, I think, entitlement in the eyes of a lot of people in this country. And I think we need to move away from that entitlement into a sense of embracement, if I can use that term. Embrace people that want to come to America for a better life and to add to this country, to bring something that I think makes us better, you know, as a people. And you know, the whole immigration debate, we can't, you know, that can segue right into this thing called racial profiling. And the reason I bring this up is because I was having a conversation with someone, and they asserted to me that racial profiling doesn't happen. Yeah. You know, and I was flabbergasted. You know, I was thinking, you know, where do I begin? You know, trying to explain. Yeah. But they were like, no, it that doesn't happen in our society.
That's a joke. Man, so I remember the first time I was racially profiled. I was a teenager. I was about 16 years old. And I was attending a house party not too far from my neighborhood. Obviously, there was, you know, some crime or something that happened in that area, and the police were just, you know, circling the area trying to figure out if they can get a hold of these people that had evaded this crime scene. And so the party was over with, and a friend of mine and some other people were standing outside, and all of a sudden, man, the police come racing down the street, lights on. Everybody put your hands up, get on the ground. Like, what is going on? And it scared me, man, because, you know, the perception of police, even where we from, it ain't a positive one. Mm-hmm. They ain't the people we look at as somebody to protect us, mm-hmm. somebody that look out for us, somebody that's in our best interest. Mm-hmm. So when you see a police car, they don't even send you the same message.
Yeah.
As it would if you were, you know, somebody else. But so this guy, he was telling me, you look just like this kid that they said was over here, you know, robbing a store, whatever the case may be. And I said, really? He said, yeah. He's about 6 foot tall, dark skin. And man, that night, that could have been anybody. Right. In the place that I was at, in the neighborhood that I was at.
Right.
That could have been absolutely anybody. And this guy, you know, he put me in the back of the police car, got to talking to me, asking me about, you know, where I was from, who my family was, and all of this. And I'm just, you know, having a conversation with him because, obviously, I don't have to feel guilty because I hadn't done anything mm-hmm. wrong. So I'm just giving him my information, being very cooperative. But his attitude changed from the moment that he grabbed me up and, you know, put me in the back of the seat to the time when we were having a conversation and him actually getting to know who I was. Mm. And that sent the message to me very early because I knew then that just based on what I looked like on the outside, that I could be victimized mm-hmm. or put in a position where I didn't feel necessarily in control, and it had nothing to do with who I was really, had nothing to do with you know, what I had going on in life. It was just the fact that I was black and I was in this particular area where something else happened and I looked like somebody that mm-hmm. done something wrong.
Well, you were obviously the culprit, and it's a shame, but it's a reality. And for people that don't understand this reality, for a black man And I'm going to infer this to all black men, and I'm sure there's anomalies that will disagree with me. But I think the majority would say anytime we see the police, they pull behind us, we get nervous.
Yeah, muster up a nervousness.
I mean, it doesn't. And I talk about the psychological stress that causes and how unfair that is for me to be driving and for my white brother to be driving and for cops to get behind him. And I have white friends just like you. They don't never think about that. So the cop gets behind me, man, I'm thinking, you know what? This could end badly. And I ain't did nothing. Prime example. Let me tell you what happened to me the other day, DT. I'm coming to work, right? So when I get up in the morning, you know, shower, all that other kind of stuff, do my hair, you know, do my little waves, and I put my do-rag on, right? And y'all picturing this, right? I put my do-rag on. And so when I get in my car, about halfway to work, I take it off, right? So, man, I get in the car, and I'm driving. This is just the other day. Last week. I'm driving, right? And I put my signal on, driving the speed limit. I switch lanes. All of a sudden, man, I see this blue light just come flying way out there. And I'm like, really? And so gets behind me. I pull over. I take my do-rag off. By the time he get out of his car, right, I put it, you know, it's put away. So right when he came up, well, first of all, he said, let me see your hands. Let me see your hands. I'm like, man, really? So, yeah, I show my hands. So what's the problem, officer? I said, hey, I wasn't speeding. He said, no, you wasn't speeding. I said, I put my signal on. He said, yeah, you put your signal on. He said, but you changed lanes too close. I said, excuse me? I said, I changed lanes too close. You know, I'm like, man, you got to be kidding me, right? I mean, did I cause an accident? Let me tell you what happened. His demeanor changed, brother, when he looked in the window and saw that I had a suit on. His whole demeanor changed. Now, what he saw was a do-rag. And right. He thought, listen, okay, I'm going to pull this brother over. He probably got drugs on him. I'm going to search his car. Oh, he got up there and he was like, I gave my info. 5 minutes later, he back. Oh, I'm going to give you a warning, Mr. Owens, and, you know, take care. You know, be safe out there.
Yeah, of course, be safe out there.
Okay. When the only thing you saw was a do-rag. I understand. You know, and what people don't understand is that, you know, it gets old. You know, you get tired of being harassed. And that's what it is. It's a form of harassment simply because of the skin that you're draped in. This not only happens to black folks. It happens to Latinos. It happens to Asians. It happens to, you know, but with black people, with the criminalization of black males, okay, is that this idea that somehow you dress a certain way, get your hair is a certain way, you're up to no good. And this implicit bias that they have, regardless, it's just, you know, criminality. You know, you see a black man, you think, you know, you get in the elevator and the white lady's nervous because she's in there with a black man. It's like, man, I don't want to, you know, all I want to do is show you some love, man. I mean, that's all I want to do. We're loving people. And I don't understand how somebody can sit up and say to me, it doesn't exist. When we live it, not just weekly, we live it daily. Even when we leave out here, okay, we know something could go wrong, not because of us, but because of the skin that we draped in.
I mean, I almost did an experiment the other day. I was driving around in my car in some nicer neighborhoods. And of course, you know, there's this unspoken allowance that we don't necessarily get, because I was driving over. I mean, it's just the neighborhood itself, man. You're looking at these, you know, million-dollar homes, and the types of cars that the people drive who live in them. And automatically, you know, if one of those people had decided to pull out of their driveway and see you, and I drive a Nissan Xterra. Mm. It ain't a flashy car, but, you know, it's mine. It's paid for. But to pull out my Nissan Xterra into this neighborhood was already probably throwing up a red flag for somebody. Mm. And also to see me in my black skin driving that car would have threw up a red flag for somebody.
Yeah, lock the doors.
Yeah, who they coming over
get
here?
Get the kids saying.
Who they coming over here to see?
Honey, you see what's out there? That guy looks dangerous.
Man, I wanted to get out of the car and just start jogging for a couple blocks.
Oh, no.
Just to see.
Oh, no. You wouldn't have made it
just
far.
Just to see,
you wouldn't have made it far. Hey. They'd have sick the dogs out of you. You know, this would have been Birmingham all over.
Like 2 6-foot Dobermans would have just came out of nowhere.
Nah, it's because, matter of fact, there was a professor, man. OU did an after Trayvon Martin panel. And this professor said they were somewhere, and she was talking about these implicit biases. They were, I forget what city they were in, but they were waiting for the coffee shop to open. And so what she did was, and she was with a black professor. And so what she did, she said she just started walking, you know, walking up and down the block, and nothing ever happened. And all of a sudden, the black professor went walking up and down the block. Bruh, police pulled up. Somebody had called and said, blah, blah. She said, just that situation. Now, here's a white professor. She said, just that situation. Me? Oh, I'm no threat. This black professor was a threat. Mm-hmm. And that's what we're talking about here. This idea that for some, whatever reason, because of the mass media, because of the historical nature, the false narrative of who we are and what we are has permeated into our culture. Therefore, regardless of your character, regardless of your education, regardless of your contributions to this society, at the end of the day, you are a threat. And that's what I was trying to get across to this person. How dangerous it is that you don't believe racial profiling happens when it's happening to me every day, and I'm seen as a threat every day. Me, man, I'm the coolest cat on the planet, I think.
Don't
you know,
to get a nobody.
Exactly. And I'm like, man, I'm a threat. No, you know, the threat, guess, man, it's to me, it's a sad existence for black males in America. And I can only speak because, again, you know, I've lived overseas. I lived in Scotland. Things were cool. Nobody tripped on me. I wasn't racial profiled there.
Man, I went to England a couple years ago, and it was nighttime, like, you know, midnight and after. And we're walking down the streets. You know, there's some little shops and stuff close to where we're staying in the hotel. And I noticed that, you know, the women even that were walking by themselves late at night did not clench their purses to feel more secure, did not cross the other side of the street because we were coming down. And it was just a different culture being there, man, and seeing that reality as opposed to being here and it be nighttime and it be the same situation where this lady not only done, you know, grabbed her purse up, she probably done took off running down the street the other way because she's seen you and perceives you as a threat. But I wonder, what is it, though, that we've been taught, rather subconsciously or consciously, that make us afraid of one another, man?
Well, I think, again, it goes back to...
Because it goes both ways, depending on the situation.
It does. And you know, I have to think about somebody else's experience because, you know, I wasn't raised that way. So it goes back to what has been instilled in you from early childhood or an experience that you might have had that you inferred to the whole entire race of people. You know, a woman that was attacked by a black man, think all black men are dangerous. Now, the attack was wrong, but black men are not all dangerous. Thought is wrong. So a person, a black person that's been done wrong by a white person, all white people out to get me. Okay. Not true. You were done wrong by that white person. All white people not out to get you. You know, so I think, you know, you're taught it, but also these experiences. And I don't think we do a good job representing, let me just say, black men. Okay, just again, last week we talked about it. Mm-hmm. Look at Cosby. Okay, this guy that we held in high esteem. And what happens with and I don't care anybody. You can disagree with this or not, but what happens with minorities, especially with black people, they seem to think we're monolithic. They seem to think we think the same, right, act the same, that we can speak for one another. I mean, it's always, so what does the black community think? I don't know what the black community thinks. I can tell you what Michael thinks. I don't know what the black community thinks. I mean, the reality is, you know, there is many voices. There's diversity in skin tone, diversity in ideas. We're Republicans, we're Democrats, we're progressive. I mean, we're liberal. We're all over the scale. And so that idea that you can take one and infer it to the entire population of black people and specifically black males is in error. And that's what happens in the media. The media, if a brother go out today and shoot up a bunch of folks, they look at all black men that way. It's not just him, okay? A white man can go out and kill up 1,000 people. You don't look at all white people. It's taught in our conscience, you see, that somehow we are so connected that flaw in character flows through all of us. But no, it's separated because black people are looked at as a group, not as individuals. Mm-hmm. White people are looked at as individuals. They see the world as individuals. And to our dismay, a lot of times we look at the world through group identity and not individual identity.
And you look at the sagging thing,
mm-hmm,
and that depiction of, you know, the black male thugged out, dragging his pants. And who started that crap, man? Like, for the life of me, I had a long time trying to understand, because even when I was young, I didn't think that was cool. I've never sagged my pants. Like, even if my pants were flooding a little bit, I would take.
Bro, you didn't hold them up with one hand, man, and walk, would, you know, and you know, you got your swag with the other, huh?
I would take getting cracked on, man, before I would bow down to that.
Yeah.
Sagging and represent myself in that way.
Yeah.
But that's a culture, you know? Mm-hmm. And like you said, this group idea of what it is to be black or what it is to be a black male, female, all the same. The idea of what it's like, you know, the culture of being a black male, you know, you follow this idea of that, and whatever that means, the way you talk, the way you dress, the way you wear your hair, the way you, you know, converse with other people in a conversation. All of those things are a group idea of what the communication is supposed to be like, when in reality, we all have an opportunity to individually engage in conversation and be able to expand on our ideas from a independent and individual perspective.
Mm-hmm. Critical thinker.
Mm-hmm.
Independent agent. There's culture, identity, the separation, the embracing of the two, and also, at the end of the day, the human experience, human interaction between one another, the human race, not the black race, the white race, not the Latino race, the human race, one mic, one voice, building the collective conscious. And, you know, I think the reason why this thing called racial profiling continues to be a day-to-day thing in our nation is because the black male voice, the one in which this particular grotesque action is just perpetrated on 24/7, does not have the microphone to tell his story. We have too many that finally break through that glass ceiling, that stay away from this topic, stay away from race, and only talk about it when it's forced upon them. They don't educate. You see, we have too many I'll pick on Don Lemon for a minute. Mm-hmm. You know, I like the brother. I'm gonna be honest with you, but Don, he needs to educate. You know, this is, I may be interviewing you. I want your opinion, but class is about to start right now. Why? Because I live this. Mm-hmm. That doesn't happen. And if a brother gets up there and begins to educate, oh, they're going to get rid of him. Because you got so many that want to step in the place that all they want to do is just dialogue. They don't want to educate. Mm-hmm. And we have to educate people on, man, you know how strange this is? Something that happens every day that people are saying, well, no, nah, it doesn't happen. Racial profiling doesn't happen. Where does that happen at? You know, I'm like, never, man, are you kidding me? I mean, it's appalling. And personally, I'm tired of being subjected to it. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be honest with you, man. I'm tired of thinking that I'm going to go to jail or somebody's going to come behind. You know, I'm tired of that, man. I just want to live my life, be respected for who I am. You know, King, you know, his vision, man, his idea of judging a person not by their skin tone. I mean, I want to get to that point, man. This show is about our listeners not just hearing us, but dialoguing with us and understanding and bringing to the conversation this idea of inclusion, that we're one people, man, one voice, one mic, that we can come together and put to bed the rest, all of this junk that we've been dealing with year after year, brother.
Be sure to share and like us on our Facebook page, One Mic, One Voice Podcast. If you guys would like to email in questions, comments, or topics, you can reach me, DT, at onemiconevoice.com or Michael Eric Owens at onemiconevoice.com.
Welcome back to the One Mic, One Voice show. I hope you're having a good time. I hope you are sitting back and relaxing and enjoying the conversation. And I believe pretty soon we're going to be opening up to get your voice so that you can get the mic in your hand and you can share anything that you want to share, because no topic is off the table when it comes to the One Mic, One Voice show.
People need to hear your stories. They need to hear your voices. They need to hear where you're coming from. And not from a place where it's just you ranting on and on about a particular problem, but how your experiences has shaped your ideas and how you really feel and how that has all come into play in who you are. So on the One Mic, One Voice show, man, we just want to make sure that everybody has an opportunity to share a story that will enlighten somebody.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because it's, and unless we come together collectively, we're not going to solve the most difficult problems facing the human kind today. I was going to say our country today, but it's beyond that, man. It's how we interact on all types of levels. And as far as I'm concerned, if they had this much dialogue and communication on a congressional level, they might be solving some problems. But that was a freebie. You know what I'm saying? White privilege, man. No topic, as I said, is off the table. And I know white privilege makes folks uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. That's okay, because this show is not about being comfortable. I know I said sit back and be comfortable. Well, I'm talking position-wise. Yeah. I'm not talking about intellectually, because what we want to do is we got to talk about these issues. There's always from the beginning to now, this idea of one race being privileged over another. And you have scholarship, growing scholarship, Dr. Peggy McIntosh. If you want to look her stuff up on white privilege, Google Tim Wise on white privilege. If you just go to YouTube and just put in white privilege, you're going to find professors talking about it. There's scholarly articles written about it. White privilege is real. We can no longer deny that it exists in our society. We have a group that is benefiting from simply their skin tone, and they're benefiting. Get this. It's unearned. You didn't do anything more than what I have done. We can have the same credentials. Let me give you a survey that was done by a Harvard professor, and it was related to jobs. And they did a survey, and they took a black and white male, okay, and they found that it was easier for a white male to get employment, okay, than it was to get employment that had less education and he had a prison record. So get this, it is more difficult for a black man with more education minus a prison record to get a job. Okay. Now, that's a Harvard professor, okay? It exists, and I want to take a moment to talk about white privilege and the impact that it has, not just on minorities, but the impact that it has on the dominant culture, on white people.
Mm-hmm. Man, to me, I mean, obviously, I've worked with people from all demographic, all backgrounds, all walks of life. And those individuals particularly that don't come from a necessarily privileged background also understand that even to be poor and white is better than being black.
Psychological wage, that's what Dr. King called it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And now think about seeing a Caucasian male homeless on the corner asking for money. Now, in any given time, this man could have the potential to turn his life around, sustain himself, build a business, be able to become very financially secure, and all because of what? The white privilege. Black man, same scenario. Not only is he going to have an issue getting himself back in order, but the potential that he perceives that he'd have is not there, because there will be barriers in his uprise. And so even though him and the man may stand in a similar situation from the beginning, in the outcome, one will prevail over the other. And that's just a statistical fact.
Yeah, it's a scary reality. I think that many of us don't want to face. People hear me say, when I hear people say, oh, you can be anything you want to be.
Depending on who you are.
To little Johnny. Little Johnny, you can be anything you want to. Oh, Johnny, you can be president of the United States. Well, Barack Obama did it, okay? But how many have we had? Okay. The likelihood of that happening are extremely low. The truth to be told is you cannot be anything you want to be, because the very fact that you are born into darker pigment means that you're born into a world that is not designed as an equal playing field. Drive around any inner city and look at the school systems, and drive through an affluent neighborhood. Okay. Go to any boardroom and see how many black professionals we have. Pull up the Fortune 500 companies and see how many black people are leading that. Let's even go to higher academia. See how many tenured professors we have at OU. Let's see how many black tenure professors we have there. It's across the country. This is not because black people are not smart. It's not because black people don't have the desire to do that. It's not because black people are smaller in numbers. It's not that. It's because there is systemic racism that prevents black people from breaking through, yeah, from reaching those levels. It has nothing to do with talent or gifts or ability or education. It has, sometimes it simply, DT, comes down to the color of your skin. Yes, I will take Samantha, but Jaquita, boom, her resume is going in the because I know she's black. Okay, there was a time where, you know, name discrimination, I talk about that in my book. There's name discrimination that you can tell, well, yeah, this is a minority, bam, we ain't hiring her, let me move on. Mm-hmm. You know, the covert, the overt racism that exists. But the problem is, it's not only hurts black people, but it hurts our country in general, because you have people that are running around here that are earning privileges, and they, and I'm not all of them. Let me say that, not all of them. Okay. But there are some of them that have been promoted to their highest level of incompetence. Okay. So they are in position simply because they don't have the skill set, but they are of the right race, and companies are suffering, employees are suffering, productivity is down, but it's based upon what? How did you get there? Oh, okay, I understand. And so many black people have simply checked out. You know, I'm not gonna get promoted, man. It ain't gonna happen. You know, I know I've been in places where I thought, you know, it just ain't gonna happen. Okay, I see what's going on here. I'm more qualified than this person. More education. Man, I've been here longer. But, yeah, he's my boss now. How did that happen? Oh, okay.
Seen that movie, The Butler?
Yeah, I seen The Butler.
It's just like you're talking about.
Exactly.
He worked years and years and years, several administrations, same pay. When asked the man, look, I've been working here. I want to make as much money as the white help. You know, we have the same skill set. I may even be more qualified. Well, guess you're gonna have to find another place to work then, ain't you, boy? And it's just a slap in the face, man, to make life so draining for black people. Sometimes having to face this reality every single day, and there is no letting up at all. And people who are not in a position to put themselves on a higher platform don't even know where to start. Mm-hmm. And so if I'm somebody who's feeling very discouraged about life and about my circumstance and about my position, then tell me how I'm going to feel about myself in pursuing anything of importance, or even feeling the confidence within myself to be able to do anything that's worthy of any type of praise or promotion. We got some work to do, y'all.
You know, and you're so right. I want to say this because I know there's probably someone listening that says, here we go again. Okay. You want the white man to give you something. We had affirmative action. Remember I said had because they got rid of it in the state of Oklahoma, right? Okay. We've done things. You know, we have black millionaires, and, you know, other than sports and entertainment, you know, I think much has not changed. But while you sit up there saying, no, this is not about a handout. Okay, this is not about needing something. What this is about is equality and equal opportunity and equal access. I don't want anything from you or above. What I want is what any human being desires. You see what I'm saying? It's not about a handout, but it's about having access, being received and being judged by my ability, my education, my creativity, my innovation, not my skin tone. That's what I'm talking about. That's what I'm asking. But if you are privileged, though, DT, first of all, what white people have to understand, you live a privileged status, okay, regardless. You can be poor white. Mm-hmm. You walk into the store. Nobody's going to be looking at you. Nobody's going to be saying you're going to steal something. Can you? Man, I walked into a store, and this dude walked with me. This just, man, last week. I walked into a store and this guy was walking around with me, man. He made me uncomfortable, man. I'm like, dude, really, I have money. You know, that's what I wanted to say to him. Dude, I don't want to steal anything. But he did not. Other customers came in. He would not leave me. And I'm thinking, really, man? You know, now if I don't buy something, in your mind, you're going to say, oh, he came in here to steal. Okay, so I'm forced to buy something in your trifling shop. Okay,
just to prove a point.
That I have money and I came in here to buy something. That's what this is about, man. Understanding that privilege exists, and yeah, you have to step outside of yourself. You got to step outside the norm and understand that. Yeah, you know, if you have privilege that you didn't earn, then you need to give it back. It doesn't belong to you. You didn't earn it. It's like the guy that didn't win the race, but he up there and they putting a medal on him. And he got his hands up and they like, well, you know, second and third place. Like, what? You didn't even run, you know. He's like, hey, I won. Yeah. No, you didn't win. You didn't earn the medal. Okay? You got to give it back. What that means is, you have to be knowledgeable of your privilege, and you got to make sure in your circle that minorities that work with you, minorities that you guess what, that you pull them up to where you are at, that you educate your other white brothers and sisters, that you make sure that this conversation is happening, not just here, but it's happening in the boardrooms. It's happening when it's time to promote somebody. You make sure that's equal. You, and that's what I'm saying, giving it up, because the natural thing is to keep it. Natural thing is to say, well, you know, let's just go and give it to John, you know. Yeah, John, you know, well, he ain't been, nah, let's go and give it to John. I know John's father. He fine. Let's give it to John. Mm-hmm. No. We can't do that, okay, because Deshaun is over there. He's been here longer. Okay, he's qualified. He needs to have an equal shot at that. That's how you, on the other side of white privilege, make sure that we can dismantle this thing called white privilege. Mm-hmm. What you think, brother?
Man, I feel like what you just talked about, going into that store and having to buy something just to prove a point, that's been systematic in the black community, mm-hmm. because we feel like we have to purchase our way to the top. To be equal to somebody means that I can buy the same things that you can buy, when in reality we see ourselves in those same neighborhoods, driving those same cars, and we're still not equal to the people, man.
No. No.
And so that perception of just materialism is been detrimental to us.
Well, you know, I learned a long time ago, a wise old man told me, he said, young blood, you know how they say that, young blood. He said, car goes with the house, not the house with the car. You see, priorities. You know, what he's talking about is a mentality, is let me have my priorities in place. Let me take care of my home, my family. You can ride around any inner city, man. You see some of the baddest cars there is. BMWs, Benzes, this, any other thing. But the front door, you can't even lock it. You understand what I'm saying? Okay. I grew up in neighborhoods like that. So you're right. I mean, this whole, but that goes back to identity, though. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like if I buy this, if I wear this, then I feel like I'm equal to that. I mean, when in our society, when white is good, black is bad. Okay, straight hair is good. Okay, blonde hair is good. Come on, I'm not trying to offend nobody, but I'm just being real. Pick up any cover of a magazine. Mm-hmm. You know, pick up, look at Halle Berry. I mean, Halle Berry's got natural hair. Okay, let's keep it real, right? Some of the most black models out there, that the top models, they don't have natural hair. Let's just keep it real. They don't, okay? Because we have this idea of what true beauty is. It is the complete conformity of the idea versus what is real. And we have bought into this idea. But we can't live the idea. Why? Because we're not like that. You know what I mean? I can't live that way. You know, I'm not going to be Brad Pitt.
Right.
You know what I mean? So I don't have enough hair to straighten it out. Maybe I, you know what I mean? I can't, I ain't him. I got to be me. Yes, I am who I am, right? I got to be me. And whether people accept or reject that, at the end of the day, you have to be true to yourself. And I don't know if you want to say something else. We're going to be coming back to white privilege, because this is a conversation that we want to have live. Mm-hmm. We want to have exchange about that. But we're just trying to drop some foundation here in which we can stand on, right?
Right.
And brother, I tell you, I have to bring up Trump.
Man, he's been losing popularity, haven't he?
Trump. Huh?
I said he's been losing popularity, haven't he?
Man, I tell you, it's a sideshow. You know, and again, it's a sideshow. This dude is like out of, he's just saying anything.
Whatever comes to his mind, huh?
But okay, let's tie this in a little bit with what we've been talking about the whole show. What if a black man was up there saying all of this stuff? Latinos are rapists and this, that, and the other thing. If white people don't like America, go back to Europe. I mean, dude, he would be, dude, they would say this dude is crazy, right? Exactly. They would shut him down, man. But with Trump, because he's a billionaire, he's of the privileged class. Yeah. We say he out there, but no.
Sorry.
He's not a psycho, though. Mm-hmm. But really what he's saying is psycho stuff, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, really, to be honest with you, man, it is out there. And his favorite phrase is, everybody knows this. Everybody loves this.
Everybody
knows this. Everybody loves this. Man, just some of your thoughts.
Man, I think I agree with you. I think the sideshow is going on a little bit too long. Donald Trump is representing himself in a way that is not helping him build his brand at all. I mean, I feel like he's already lost contracts with some major corporations.
Yeah, Macy's involved with. And Univision. And
and so these people are in his pockets. It's not really just about his opinion, you know. Now it's about the finance. And how could you, because obviously the money has given him the entitlement. Mm-hmm. But that just lets you see, man, how powerful one person can become in the privileged state just based on finance alone. Because obviously this man have nothing to offer the country intellectually at all.
And I mean, you said it, right? I mean, money buys access, right? But even if you, again, I still go back, I say, if you were a minority, if this was a Latino dude standing up saying this, I think people would be,
man, you know, think he would have made it off the podium that night?
He wouldn't have made it off the podium that night. But because he is of the privileged class and he has money. But let me tell you what's dangerous. I know it's funny on one end, the sideshow, because I'm just like, what is he going to say next? Right. I'm
really concerned for him, man, because the stuff that come out of his mouth, you got to be worried, like, man.
But you know what? I'm glad you're concerned, because I'm not concerned. You know, I just want to know what else is going to come out this man's mouth.
I'm concerned because I'm not sure if he'll have another few opportunities to say these things that have been coming out of his mouth.
Well, well, you know, the Mexican dude that escaped prison, right?
El Chapo.
Yeah, he said, yeah, he wasn't too pleased, man. And, you know, they can be serious now. You know, they can catch up with you. Yeah, they can come in the midnight hour and do something dangerous to you. He should be cautious when it comes to that. You know, I'm going to give Trump a little credit here. I don't think he is thinking all Mexicans are rapists and this and the other thing. And I don't think he really has anything against minorities. I'm not going to throw him in there. I just think he's not a very bright man. I just think he's ignorant. And I think what happens is he got the mic, man. And he has no control. He has no handlers. Me and everybody said, well, hey, Donald, hey, man. Oh,
cut it,
Jim. Yeah. You know, come down. You know, he doesn't have that. And so he's just unscripted, whatever. Like he said about McCain, man, he's not. I'm like, man, this dude was like torture for 6 years. I'm like, dude, are you serious? I mean, this is like crazy, man. I'm like, yes, if anyone's a hero, it's a guy that was captured in war, that was in a camp for 6 years, that was tortured, and he's still alive today. Yeah, I think
what did
he's
say?
A hero.
He says something like, I like people who hadn't been captured.
Yeah, yeah, you like. So what does that mean? Yeah. So, you know, you like people. It's just great. That is just great. So when he said that, I said, yeah, he's out of control. But this is why I say it's dangerous. It might be dangerous for his own personal life, but I say it's dangerous because there is a segment in this country that, believe it or not, share his same views. And when people were saying that when he said that about our Latinos brothers and sisters, that he was done. I said, no, he's not done. And when he said that about McCain, people said this was a nail in his coffin. He's not done. Because what they don't understand, and this is what kills me about the pundits on TV. They have all these political analysts and pundits and correspondents. And I'm just thinking, do y'all know anything? He's tapping into a segment in our country that sees our country that way. And he's going to ride that. He's going to ride that until the debate. That's his downfall because he ain't got no substance. So when they say, well, okay, how you going to secure the border? How you going to deal with education? He has no substance. But right now, this is the avenue for him because he can talk as crazy he wants to. Nobody's going to challenge him on that. There's no critical follow-up questions to how you're going to move things forward. So until then, the Democrats are loving it. I mean, really. I mean, they're loving it, man. The Republicans are sweating it because they don't want to come out against him because probably – Donald's going to have to give some of that money to one of those campaigns.
Oh, that's for sure. That is for sure. And like you said, this may just be a front stunt leading up into that.
He's going to be done when the debates come on. But, you know, I was looking on Facebook, man. I see people that support him that think he's speaking the truth, bringing truth to power, and he's – you know, he's saying things that people are afraid to say.
That was his campaign, huh?
Yeah.
So. I'm saying what they don't want to say. Y'all being quiet, I'm about to run my mouth.
Well, hopefully, you know, that political sideshow will end soon and we can get down to some real debate about the issues that are happening in our country. And one thing, you know, I am just completely disappointed in is just this gridlock that has happened over the last almost 8 years. And I know people, I hear you now. You're not online, but I can hear you in my headphones saying to me that the president is a problem. The president's not the problem. See, people don't understand how our government works. Okay, you have a Congress, you have a Senate, and you have a House. Okay, the Senate and the House are not working together. Okay, they write laws, they make bills. Okay, and so the fact that you shouldn't be mad at at the president. What you need to be is mad at your congressional leader because they are gridlocked and they have got nothing done simply because they don't like the man that's in the seat. Moving this country forward, in my opinion, has less to do with the man in the seat and more to do with the houses of Congress so that we can, guess what? They represent the people. Mm-hmm. They are elected by the people. I know the president is, but he one dude. Okay. It's the houses of Congress, man, that's supposed to be moving this country forward, showing leadership. Yeah, the president shows leadership. But guess what, folks? You know what? We elect people to do what? To carry forth our interests. And I don't know about you. My interest has not been carried forth.
Not been carried out.
And so I'm hoping that we can move beyond that, man, and see what happens here. But I'm pessimistic about that.
With the social media thing today, especially, do you think that that as more candidates come about, as we see more elections, that people will stray away from the voting polls? Because it seems like, one, the disrespect that's coming to Obama, like you're saying, everybody putting the blame on him. But at the same time, everybody's not really understanding the whole scheme of the things that it takes to make it all work together. And so with so much social media criticism, I suspect to see more, you know, uprise of the people, maybe in a positive way, uplifting their voices to be able to say, man, this is what we want. This is what we need. This is what it's going to take to put us in a position that everybody can be happy.
Well, I think you're correct. I think social media is already playing a huge part in communicating those angst, communicating those desires to congressional leaders and so forth. The danger I see in politics today is we have a group, say, of young people that are not part of the political process, and they really don't see the impact that voting makes. And so we have some of the lowest voter turnout in history. And that's what the establishment wants. They don't want high voter turnout. Okay, that's why you have all these restrictive laws that are coming up now, voter ID and all these other kind of things, because great turnout means you're going to have some competition. Mm-hmm. If I'm the incumbent, hey, listen, I want low voter turnout because mm-hmm. I know the folks that support me, they're going to come out and mm-hmm. I'm going to win. And so I think it's that apathy and that lack of apathy among older people, but lack of knowledge among young folk in the fact that, because there are some young people that are getting into politics, but they're following in the same vein in which they've been taught, divisiveness. There is no balance. You see no balance candidates coming into the field. It's one side or the other. The country split along the political lines. Identity politics have taken over. So what you see here today, I think you're right. I think young people have figured out that they can vent in this media. So how do you take this media and turn it into a force that can move not just from the stratosphere into the polling place? Because regardless of what you say and you do on social media, unless you vote, it ain't gonna make a difference. Mm-hmm. Almost said something wrong there. I almost use a word, man, but I think some of my folks might be listening to this, man. So, you know, I'm trying to keep it, you know what I mean? I'm trying to keep it clean, you know. I said something last time, and you know, I heard it, and I was like, ooh, okay, yeah, I need to keep it a little clean. But every now and then, you know, brother got to be a brother.
Got to keep it real, man.
You know.
Got to keep it authentic.
Authentic.
Got to keep it
Keep it clean. Authentic. I want to respect all people. Because we love
all
people.
That's why we're here, man. We want to respect all people, give all people a voice to be able to speak their piece.
Well, I can tell you what, man. It's been a great show, man. You know, get the second one under our belt. I'm just looking forward to opening up the lines so that we can get into some serious debate with our listeners. And again, you know, like DT said, one mic, one voice is for you. It's for you to be heard. It's for you to express your. I don't care what your opinion is. Just make sure it's informed. And then we will make sure it's informed.
Sort the rest out later.
There's some history. But we just want to we want to hear from you. We want you to share. If you disagree, that's cool. That's what this is about. The debate is not about groupthink, that we all think alike. No. This is about diverging opinions so that we can come to an understanding. So I'm just looking forward to that. One mic, one voice. We out, D.
Let's get it.
As always, one mic, one voice. History will speak of us. Somewhere in the distant future, a scribe will reach down deep into the archives of our time. And what will she find? Will she discover that we overcame our differences? Will she find that out of many, we became one? Or will she find that we solved nothing and remain a divided people? Yes, history will speak of us.